Our first speaker is Sue Visser. She's the lead epidemiologist for the Child Development Studies team within the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Her expertise is in neurobehavioral and mental health conditions, including ADHD and Tourette syndrome. She currently directs and participates in federal longitudinal research contracts investigating developmental outcomes of youth with physical and social health risks. So, Sue.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-author here, Dr. Reem Grandeur, who is from the Maternal Child Health Bureau, is also here today presenting, and also Melissa Danielson, who's our biostatistician, who's not here with us today, but would love to be. And I'm going to skip the learning objectives because we're short on time and just get right down into the background. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, is the most common neurobehavioral disorder of childhood. And it's characterized by symptoms of hyperactivity, impulsivity, and inattention with really strong, significant functional impairment. And it's that functional impairment that really leads to problems in school, family functioning, peer functioning, educational attainment. There's actually differences in marital outcome. It really impacts a wide range of domains of functioning. And we know that rates of ADHD, based on parent report, have been increasing for over a decade. And here we see results from the National Survey of Children's Health, which is sponsored and directed by the Maternal Child Health Bureau. And we see that rates increased from 7.8% to 9.5% in just 4 years, between 2003 and 2007. That's a 22% increase and represents a million more children with a diagnosis over that time period. When we look at rates of having ever been diagnosed, 9.5%, alongside current rates of ADHD, which is 7.2%, we see that there is a difference there, and that's appropriate because there is a developmental component to ADHD, and there are some children who will grow out of the functional limiting levels of ADHD. And then about 4.8% of American youth 4 to 17 years of age have a current diagnosis and are currently taking ADHD medication. When we look at the proportional allocation of medication status, we see that about half of the kids with current ADHD are taking medication, and about a quarter had a diagnosis and are not currently taking the medication, and about a quarter currently have a diagnosis and are not taking medication. ADHD medication increases with severity, which is, of course, completely appropriate. We want to see that children who have the most severe impairments are receiving treatment for ADHD. And until now, we really, on national surveys, did not have much more information about ADHD treatment other than ADHD medication. Let's talk a little bit about ADHD medication. The pharmacological treatments have really exploded in the past decade, and you've probably seen this. It's had some direct marketing to families in the media. We see lots of extended formulations coming onto the market throughout the 90s, which allowed parents to really make the choice as to whether or not they wanted to include the school in the medication treatment plans for their children. And in addition to long-acting formulations, we also had just a wide variety of changes in the modality that you could choose for ADHD medication. There was a patch, sublingual medication. Now we have liquid formulations of ADHD meds. So really the modalities have expanded, the number of medications that have expanded. So these really relate to a lot more options in pharmacological treatment. And as such, we've really needed to adjust recommendations for our professional clinicians in terms of how we guide their use of these medications, as well as the available behavioral interventions and alternative therapies that may be out there for the treatment of ADHD. And two professional academies have guidelines around ADHD that really drive most of the clinical work in diagnostic and treatment plans around ADHD, and that's ACAP, American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, which just completed their annual meeting yesterday, right here in San Francisco, and also the American Academy of Pediatrics, which updated their diagnostic and treatment guidelines in 2011, and I was epidemiologist on that committee that revised those guidelines, and we really developed some age-specific recommendations. It used to be that we had guidance for children 6 to 12 years of age, but there have been increasing data that suggests that practitioners are really treating ADHD for younger populations and also children going into adolescence and college age. And of course, there's been quite an increase in the rates of adult diagnosis and treatment for ADHD as well. And so they expanded the guidelines to incorporate all children, preschool through older adolescents. And what we really found was that there was some evidence-based behavioral intervention for preschoolers. And so the recommendation was that it be used as the first-line treatment for children, preschool children with ADHD, and that medication and behavioral therapy can be used for older children. For preschoolers, if behavioral intervention completely fails and severe impairment persists, related to the ADHD symptoms, then only methylphenidate, short-acting methylphenidate, can be used as a treatment modality for preschool ADHD. But it was seen and written very strongly that this should not be considered a first-line treatment for ADHD. And then this past year, in 2011, the Agency for Health Research Quality, ARC, published a comparative effectiveness study for preschoolers and came up with four reliable evidence-based behavioral interventions for preschoolers with ADHD, and that really supplements the guidelines and points clinicians to behavioral interventions that can be used. In general, both of these professional academies, as well as nurse practitioners, the Professional Academy for Nurse Practitioners, NAPNAP, they recommend multimodal treatment for ADHD, and that means a combination of behavioral intervention and medication. The medication is the single best treatment to reduce symptoms, and the behavioral intervention is really important for decreasing family functioning problems as well as peer functioning problems. But there's inconsistent availability of evidence based behavioral therapies, the ARC report notwithstanding. And there's also a lack of evidence for the use of dietary supplements, which our partner, CHAD, Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, report is very common among their membership. So the rationale for this study was to use available data to try to generate national estimates for non-pharmacological treatment of ADHD alongside pharmacological treatment of ADHD, and also to try to get our first estimates of dietary supplement use for the treatment of ADHD. I also wanted to evaluate the alignment of the 2009 to 2010 rates against AAP's 2011 treatment recommendations, just to see in terms of benchmarks. Obviously, the recommendations came after the rates could be generated, but we want to benchmark it and see how far we need to go. So we'll be using the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs as our data source. This is a data source that is public use now, directed by the Maternal Child Health Bureau, Health Resources and Services Administration, my colleagues sitting with me today, and it's conducted by CDC through the State and Local Area Integrated Telephone Survey. So it's a random digit dialed survey using the National Immunization Survey sampling frame. It's been administered three times to date. We'll be looking at the 2009 to 2010 data today. And the survey goal is to assess the prevalence and impact of special health care needs among children in the United States. And there are approximately 40,000 surveys conducted per administration, sometimes a little bit more. We'll be looking at about 9,500 responses, sets of responses for children 4 to 17 years of age, plus when I look at the preschoolers, we're going to add those in for another couple hundred. And so we have ample sample size to look at both the rates of ADHD treatment, but also look at some demographics as well. And I'll be generating weighted estimates of current ADHD medication, past year behavioral therapy, current use of dietary supplements, which were added as a supplement to the survey in 2009 and 10 to generate these first estimates within a sample of children with special health care needs nationally. I'll use chi-square tests to test for differences in treatment rates by demographics, ADHD severity, as well as mental health comorbidity. And ultimately, we want to evaluate the treatment patterns against these new age-specific guidelines from AAP. Just taking a quick look, rates of ADHD among children with special health care needs by age. I wanted to point out in a previous slide, and does the light come down a little bit? I don't know if you guys can see that. About 94% of children with of ADHD are children with special health care needs. So by using the children with special health care needs data set, we really have a fantastic group of kids that are almost all in there because they're taking ADHD medications. And that's one component of the children with special health care needs case definition. Great, thank you. You can see here that when we place the The lighter bars on the outside is overall current ADHD diagnosis, and the darker bars on the inside are current ADHD medication. So you can see that the rates of diagnosis and medication pick up in early childhood and then tend to level off. And what we used to see, if we compare this back to data in 2003-2004, these rates really dropped off in adolescence. And we're seeing over time that these rates are stabilizing, both diagnosis and current medication treatment. But there's consistently a higher rate of diagnosis and treatment among boys as compared to girls. And when we look at the national rate for children 4 to 17 years of age for the different ADHD treatments, this is our first look into the comparative rates for these. About 3/4 of kids with a current ADHD diagnosis are taking ADHD medications. 44% are receiving behavioral therapy of some kind, and we didn't ask about quality or type. About 10% are receiving dietary supplements. And then 31% are receiving what we call multimodal therapy of both medication and behavioral intervention. I'm going to restrict now to children 6 to 17 years of age, so the school age population. And what we see is that 88% of children with special health care needs with ADHD were treated with either ADHD medication or behavioral therapy, which is actually, I think, really, truly fantastic. If you have a child who has ADHD, they should be receiving some form of intervention, and depending on the severity, behavioral versus medication, that's going to be a clinician and a family choice. But to have almost 90% of them in some form of treatment, I think, is really fantastic and represents really solid work in behavioral disorders nationally. But only 31% were engaged with what we consider multimodal treatment. And if you look there at the red piece of the pie, 44% were receiving medication alone. And although this may be appropriate for some families, the failure to receive behavioral intervention probably means that they're falling short of the most effective way of getting family functioning and peer functioning back up. We're going to look at some factors associated with ADHD medication specifically, and the bars with the dots are statistically significantly different just in overall chi-square test statistics. And what we see is that if you are white in America, you're more likely to receive ADHD medication treatment. And if you have insurance, also, and that's probably related and pulled through accessibility issues. There is a statistical trend for gender with higher rates of medication among boys, just very slightly there. We also see that rates of medication treatment for ADHD was highest among states in the Midwest. And now turning to behavioral therapy, looking at the factors associated with behavioral therapy, it was associated with younger age, black race, Hispanic ethnicity, and having public insurance with or without private insurance. Rates of behavioral therapy for ADHD were also highest among states in the Northeast. And although this might seem a little bit curious to have any sort of regional variation, there are really strong programs, behavioral programs in the Northeast. Dr. Bill Pelham has developed a number of both intensive behavioral interventions as well as some more generalized universal approaches to behavioral intervention for kids. And this is probably carrying some of that weight, and accessibility in those areas probably also increases the use. And then when we look at co-occurring mental health conditions, we see that behavioral intervention therapy is higher across all of the co-occurring mental health conditions as compared to not having a co-occurring mental health condition. It's also significantly associated with severity. And then finally, for dietary supplement use for ADHD treatments, we looked at a number of demographics here and found that ADHD treatment using these dietary supplements was significantly associated with younger age. And given the fact that dietary supplements are not regulated fully, and we don't have any evidence that suggests that these are efficacious for the treatment of ADHD, that's a bit of an issue that I think that we need to follow up, and we'll talk about that in the discussion. Not sure why the L wrapped around on that, just keeping you on your toes, but we're going to stratify now by age. And we have preschoolers on the left, the 2 to 5-year-olds, and the school-age population on the right. And first, let's take a look at the light green bars. And those are the children receiving behavioral intervention alone. And you see that 34% of kids in preschool are receiving behavioral therapy if they have ADHD. And that is, as we mentioned earlier, the first line treatment for preschool ADHD. But then we have a quarter of kids who are receiving medication alone, no behavioral intervention. And then about 20% of kids who are receiving behavioral intervention and medications, which are theoretically, hopefully, the kids who have greater severity and are able to access both therapies. And then 22% who are not receiving either intervention. And that's in stark contrast to what we see among the school-age population, where here the red piece of the pie grows, and we have about 44% of the population receiving medication alone, and only 31% receiving behavioral intervention, plus pharmacological treatments in the form of ADHD medication. So a little discussion before I go into my conclusions. There are many factors that impact treatment choices. There is, first, family preference. We have definitely issues of culture and race that's spread out throughout the literature. African-American populations, as well as populations of Latin descent, are for sure less likely to access pharmacological treatments. They're also more likely to be concerned about side effects and are just less receptive to pharmacological intervention. And we certainly saw that with those factors related to behavioral therapy, the choice for behavioral therapy in these data. There's also the issue of practitioner preference. There is research that suggests that pediatricians are more willing to access behavioral interventions, prescribe, as it were, behavioral interventions, particularly if there's a co-located developmental and behavioral pediatrician that they can directly refer over to. And psychiatrists really are a lot less likely to prescribe or discuss behavioral interventions with their clients. And there's some new work out on shared decision-making, which is more than just discussing the options with the family. It's really taking the time to have them be an active participant in figuring out the different options, which options might be the best specifically for their family, specifically for the set of symptoms that they're seeing. And this shared decision-making tends to be a little bit more supported by pediatricians than specialists. So something to consider for the future. And accessibility of ADHD medication. We know that insurance and geography are both associated with being able to access ADHD medication. And for the first time, we had over the past year and a half ADHD medication shortages that resulted from the uneven distribution of the ingredients for specific ADHD medications, the active ingredients for meds, for over a year's time. And that resulted in quite a few panicked parents throughout the United States. I got a number of calls from those parents. So certainly where you are, where you sit, can tie to medication shortages, particularly now that we have over 2.5 million children in America taking these meds, not to mention adults with ADHD. And then also the availability of high-quality interventions. ARC recommended these four, parent-child interaction therapy, Triple P, the New Forest Program, and Incredible Years. New Forest Program is only available in the UK. Incredible Years is available depending on where you are, especially if you're located in an area that has an academic institution that has a vested interest in Incredible Years. PCIT is probably the most available. It's a therapist has to be trained in PCIT, and if you Google PCIT trained therapist, you can probably find one in an urban area, but definitely not in a rural area. And Triple P is extremely spotty. So taken together, a single parent's likelihood of accessing any of these four interventions is very, very low unless you're in an urban area with an academic institution that has probably a funding relationship for developing one of these four programs. So it's a concern. Finally, co-located staff. We know from several studies that co-located staff can increase your likelihood of administering behavioral therapy. So some general conclusions about ADHD treatment among children with special health care needs with ADHD. Demographic factors, ADHD severity, and comorbidities were consistently associated with ADHD treatment type. Medication was the most common ADHD treatment for school-age kids with special health care needs, and about 3/4 of them were taking ADHD meds. Multimodal therapy for ADHD, although the recommended therapy for the decrease in symptoms and impact were reported by less than 1/3 of all of our kids in the study. And these data represent an important benchmark, particularly for the preschoolers with ADHD, as only 1/4 of preschoolers that we saw were receiving ADHD medications, or a full 1/4, I should say, were receiving ADHD medications. and availability of treatments and shared decision making may actually influence ADHD treatment choice in the future. So that's all I have. Please follow me on Twitter if you have any sort of interest in that. I tweet everything related to children's mental health that comes through CDC, and please feel free also to email me if you have any further questions. I think I might have 30 seconds if there's a question.
28,
yeah, I got the same thing. Okay. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Just any thoughts about the regional variation in diagnosis as opposed to treatment diagnosis?
I have a lot of thoughts on that. I'll try to be brief. So I think one component of that are demographics. Poverty is certainly associated with ADHD, but the risk factors for, as well as Medicaid, fully covers ADHD diagnosis and treatment titration, all of that. So if you are more likely to have ADHD and you have insurance that's more likely to diagnose and treat it, those combination of factors can really influence it. But also I think availability of different therapies plays a strong role in this. And then there's a factor that we just have not yet been able to tie down yet in terms of why, especially in the West. I have some maps from other presentations. The West is extremely low in terms of diagnosis of ADHD. And although they have additional protective factors, there are factors we can't model out as hard as I've tried. So we'll continue to investigate that.